How you doing, everybody? I'm Jim Ladd. Welcome to the SFX Radio Network Press Conference with Roger Waters. We're here to discuss the continuation of Roger's In the Flesh Tour 2000, the upcoming release of Is There Anybody Out There? The Wall Live from Pink Floyd, and Roger's new solo record. Joining us now from Paris, France, please welcome Roger Waters.
Hello, Roger. Hi, Jim.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing well.
You begin touring again on June 2nd in Tampa, Florida, and you're going to do 23 cities in all. Tickets are already on sale in most cities. And I just want to know, first off, were you surprised at the overwhelming reception you received on the first leg of this tour?
Yeah, I was surprised. It was extremely gratifying. And it made us a very happy little band of campers, I don't mind telling you.
Would you like to expand on that?
There's something very pleasurable about playing music and people sitting and listening to it and telling you that they like it. And it's a happy situation and I like it. What more can I say?
Well, you have spoken about the magic that happens when you really connect with an audience. And I imagine that's different than just, does that happen every night, that magic connection, or is that kind of a rare thing? And describe the feeling for me.
Well, it happened every night on the first leg of the tour, just about. There were a couple of nights when I got involved in some of the old stuff. Strangely enough, in the smallest venues, we did the Rosemont Theatre in Chicago, and that was one of the less good gigs, because notwithstanding the fact that there were only 3,000 or 3,500 people there, there were two or three who were wanting to whistle, do the old joining in business through the whole show, which I find rather distracting, I have to say. When you're trying to sing a song and there's somebody whistling loudly through it, it's off-putting. But by and large, we had wonderful responses from the audiences, and the magic was definitely there. I got a lot of kind of shivers down my spine.
Glad to hear that. We might just put it out there in the ether that if you're going to go to one of these concerts and you really want to be connected with Roger, shut up during the quiet songs and go nuts at the end of the tune. Is that fair to say?
That would be marvelous.
Now, speaking of the shows, first off, you were surprised, I think, at the fact that you actually had to cancel some of the smaller halls and rebook in some of the bigger places because the response was so great. Is that correct?
Clearly we didn't have to, but in fact, the very small halls didn't work very well with this show. You know, that the Rosemont Theatre in Chicago was too small for this show, and there were a couple of others. So basically, in Quebec was a bit too small. It felt like cramming a medium-sized show into a very small venue didn't work. So it seems to work best in places that are from sort of 6,000 or 7,000 people up to, you know, some of the sheds. Some of the indoor-outdoor venues were kind of 20,000 people. I think any bigger than that, and it would start becoming alienating again.
Well, this brings us to the point that you are really unequaled when it comes to staging a show. Now, every band, of course, uses some form of lights and special effects to one degree or another, but your show always has a storyline that you use these things to enhance the show, rather than merely having a lot of sound and fury, which signifies nothing. Well, this tour, does it have a theme, a thematic thread to it from beginning, middle, and end to the show?
Not really. The narrative, such as it is really the narrative of my career. It's something of a greatest hit. There's work from my days with Pink Floyd, as well as stuff I've done since I left, and we'll be doing at least one new song during this tour. So really the way it hangs together is that the way the songs connect with one another dictates the running order, and so it's a kind of a, there is no real narrative. Although, because, you know, because everything's written by one guy, then there's some kind of a philosophical and musical thread running through it all.
Will the second leg of this tour differ from the first? And by that, I mean, did you, you know, do something, you know, after all of these shows, and you thought, well, geez, when we go back out again, I want to try this or that, or is it going to be fairly the same set list?
No, well, the set list has changed. I've made a few changes to it. I've dropped some tunes and put other tunes in instead, and I've changed the, and I've continued to work on the show. I've been working for the last couple of days, in fact, with Jonathan Park on new visual stuff and changing visual stuff in the show. I'm dropping some of the stuff I did from the wall and adding some other things.
Okay. You did, which I was really happy to hear, some personal meet and greets with the audience after some of your shows. I wanted to ask you how you liked that experience. Will you be doing more of these?
What, you mean just outside the gig?
Yeah, I understood that you like took time to actually, you know, shake hands, talk to people, sign autographs, whatever. Spend some time with them.
Yeah. I don't mind doing that, but, you know, I mean, clearly, it's a numbers thing. If there's, like, 40 or 50 people, then you can say hello to them all and sign something, and, you know, they can say thank you, and you can say thank you, and everybody goes away happy. If there's a lot more than that, then it could become a problem. But, yeah, on the last tour, if I ever see people, you know, standing around with something to be signed, I'm very happy to, if I've got the time, which I usually have, to sign it for them. I'm a bit concerned about, though, I see there seems to be some kind of a business in selling on signed articles and memorabilia. You know, you start seeing the same faces in city after city, and suddenly the same people have got all your albums from the start, and it's quite clear that they're actually in a business. That these things are going to go to trade fairs or fan conventions or something, and they're selling on these autograph items. When I see those faces, I refuse to sign that stuff. I'm very, you know, if somebody's got a treasured album and they bring it in and they want me to sign it, I couldn't be happier than to personalize that. But I'm not really interested in helping people run businesses.
Good for you. Let's get back to the song list for a minute, and I asked you this the last time I saw you. You had a great story about it. When you look back over your career with so many songs to choose from, how did you ever decide on the set list?
I went back to the beginning and I listened to all the songs, all of them, and I wrote a list of everything I wanted to do, and it was about 5 hours long, so then I started hacking at it, and I whittled it down to a couple of hours. And then there's a couple of things that, you know, you playing the songs night after night on the last tour, it became clear, you know, which ones worked really well and which ones weren't so good. So I've put in a couple of, I'm doing Set the Controls now, which I didn't do on the last thing. What else am I doing new? I'm going to do Bravery from Amused to Death. I thought the stuff from Amused to Death worked great, apart from What God Wants, which was always hard work. Every night it seemed like hard work to, you know, the theatre of the piece was difficult to get across. And so I'm probably dropping that, and I don't know.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I was so hoping to that you would do What God Wants. That's too bad.
Well, I watched the video again the other night, and I was watching it and thinking, you know, this could work if we put that guitar part in here so the whole thing doesn't grind to a halt when the vocals start, and if we edited it a bit, shortened it, and if I brought up the voices which are on tape, you know, the shouting responses or what God, then it could work. It's maybe a question of dynamics. So I'm still not completely clear what I'm going to do.
Can you very quickly run down the people in the band, and I especially want to make mention of that little midget from Wales.
Right. How quickly do you want me to do this?
Well, just tell us who's in the band. But there's no, I don't have a stopwatch on you, Roger.
I wondered whether you wanted Tom Scramble or lead guitar, you know, like that, or whether you wanted it at a sort of more, you know, when you said very quickly. But I think I've got it. I got the picture.
Thank
now.
You.
The drummer is called Graham Broad. And there's a couple of three guitar players, Snowy White, who, you know, I have a long history with. He was one of the extra guitar players in Pink Floyd for a long time. So he, in fact, did the original Washers. Doyle Bramhall the second, who's I'm sure lots of people in LA will know him, though he's actually from Texas. Andy Fairweather Lowe, the ubiquitous Welshman,
yeah.
One of the great guitar players, is in the band as always. And then the two keyboard players, John Karin and Andy Wallace, and two other vocalists, Katie Castoon and P.P. Arnold, who were on the first leg of the tour last year. And in fact, I'm adding a third woman. Doyle's wife is going to join us, so that there are three background vocals rather than two. I felt that is thickening up a bit.
Let's talk about the new live version of The Wall, which will be in stores on April 18th. The title will be Is There Anybody Out There? The Wall Live, and this was recorded at Earl's Court in London. Why did you choose that particular performance?
Those are the only performances that were recorded.
No way.
Actually, that's not true. There was some. The performances in 1980 were recorded, but very badly. These are the only ones that were recorded with any kind of real separation on 48 tracks. So it's just those five nights is all that exists, really.
Oh, geez. So L.A., New York, and the one in Germany, no, didn't happen.
No.
How long had it been since you heard these shows? 20 years?
Yeah.
Wow. And did you do any overdubbing or re-recording for the live CD?
No. So nothing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's as it happened, that's how we're hearing it.
Yeah. Scary, eh?
Well, I think it's a wonderful piece of history. You know, that
you know, strangely enough, the performances sound really good. I mean, it's quite clear listening to it that it is live, but we haven't fiddled with anything. I think we were all agreed that that would not be a good idea.
Now, that begs the question, when you say we were all agreed, what do you mean by that?
Well, I don't know what I mean. I didn't hear that anybody had said, you know, let's re-record all the vocals.
Okay.
I want to do the drums again, please. So I just assume we were all agreed. I didn't actually sit in the room and say, now, are we all agreed?
I see. Okay. Do you have fond memories of those performances? Was it a good time in your career?
Absolutely, yeah. They were fantastic. They really were. It was kind of a daft idea, and the fact that with the help of Jerry Scarfe and Mark Fisher and Jonathan Park, who were the main collaborators in putting the shows together, that we kind of pulled it off, and they worked as well as they did, was just great, and every night was a great pleasure.
You know, I'm glad to hear that, because when you talk to people who attended those shows, that's a real hallmark in their lives. You know, those shows made such an impression on people. Not me, but, you know, most people. That I'm glad to hear that you had, you know, that it made an impression on you as well.
Yeah. It was cool.
You have included two songs on this live album, we're talking about The Wall now, that are not on the studio version that you played that night, and one of which is What Shall We Do Now, and the other is The Last Few Bricks. Right?
Wrong.
Wrong.
Well, you know, the idea that these are new songs is wrong. They aren't new songs. What they are is, what should we do now? Is the list of consumer. You know, do you remember in the movie the wall of consumer items?
Yeah.
And it's that list, and it actually figures in the lyrics on the studio album, but the cut was not on the studio album because it didn't. It screwed up the dynamic of the record. Shall we buy a new guitar? Shall we drive a more powerful car? Shall we work through the night? Shall we get into fights and all that? But it's that.
Right.
So there's nothing very new about it. And the last few bricks is towards the end of the first half. In rehearsal, we discovered that physically the guys who were building the wall didn't have time to finish it for Goodbye Cruel World. So we had to fill in a few minutes of time, so we actually played a kind of reprise of some of the tunes from the first half. So it's actually, there's nothing new about that either. It's just a medley of bits from the first half of the show.
Okay. I'll try not to be so literal next time.
Well, no, it's an interesting point because the, you know, the record company have put out that there are two new songs of this thing, and it's just not true, and I think people should know.
No, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. They're not new like you wrote them yesterday. They're just, well, they just weren't on the...
Well, and they you know, they What Shall We Do Now is in the movie.
Right.
You know, so anybody who's got the movie has had that for the last kind of 19 years or something. And the other bit, it's just a medley.
Whose idea was it to celebrate the 20th anniversary of The Wall with this release? Did you say, guys, let's do this, or the record company?
I don't, it certainly wasn't my idea. It was concocted between, between Steve Irwin and Dave Gilmore and the record company, I suppose. I would think probably largely the record company. And I was a bit... But, you know, when I heard of the idea, I thought, oh, because it felt a bit like, you know, scrabbling to scrape the bottom of the barrel and see if there were any dollar bills left sticking there that could be, you know, scraped up. And so I was rather against the idea. And then I actually talked to my son, Harry, who's 23 now, and he said, well, why are you against it? You know, there, a lot of people are interested in live recordings, and some bands that he likes, particularly like the, you know, the American band Fish, for instance. He said somebody or other records every single show they do, and a lot of people listen to them. He does, for instance. You know, there's a big kind of market in bootleg recordings, and there's a big interest in recordings of live performances of pieces of work that people know well. And I thought, well, yeah, why shouldn't there be? And actually, James Guthrie, who has produced the record and done all the mixes, has done a great job, and it sounds really good. You know, it's really interesting to hear what happened when we did it live. And it is the original cast recording.
It is the original cast recording. That's true. That's true. Let's go on to something new. Okay.
Yes.
You have already begun work, I am told, on a new solo project. Yes.
Yes.
And what will be the title and subject of this work, Mr. Waters?
I'm not really sure. When I went in, I've just done a month's work in Compass Point in Nassau with the band who I just told you about. And Andy wasn't there, and the girls weren't there, but the rest of the band were there. Andy Wallace wasn't there, Andy Fairweather was. And we cut five tracks, three or four of which I think have lyrics already, and one doesn't have any. And one of them is the song Each Small Candle, which we performed once on the last tour. We did it in Kansas City on the last gig. And I thought that that's what the whole record was going to be about, was Each Small Candle, about, you know, the idea that we all have a responsibility for our own behaviour, and everything that everybody does in life impinges on everyone else, broadly. But some other songs are appearing, and they have kind of connections with each other, but it seems to be broadening out from that initial concept. So it may well be that the album will still be called Each Small Candle, because I like that title. Each Small Candle Lights the Corner of the Dark. But it seems to be about love.
About love.
Yeah.
Well, I really like the metaphor of the candle and the fact that that our individual light, you know, either singularly or combined, you know, should illuminate the dark.
Yeah. Well, I like that idea too. But there's another new song called The Flickering Flame, and it's a long, involved lyric, but the last bit of the lyric says something about what the thing is about as well, which is the last few couplets go, when my synapses pause in their quest for applause, when my ego lets go of my end of the bone to focus instead on the love that is precious to me, then I shall be free.
Oh, yeah. Very, very
so that's kind of what it's about too.
Did you say when my ego lets go of my end of the bone?
Yeah.
That's a great line.
Hey.
Yeah. You know, you still got it, pal. You know what I mean? You still got it. Damn, that's a great line. Do you have any idea when this will be done? In, you know, 6 months, a year, whenever it's done, it's done.
No, I'm working on it. I'm in Paris at the moment working on the opera, but the singer I was supposed to be working with this week is an American tenor called Paul Groves, is sadly got to get well soon, Paul. So I've found myself with a bunch of studio time and nothing much to fill it with. So I'm actually working on these songs now instead of working with him. And then next week I work with Ying Huang, who's a soprano who's doing the opera.
Okay.
And what I'd like to do is finish the lyrics, maybe write a couple more songs, then go back in with the band, learn them, work out exactly how the whole thing fits together, and then re-record everything with the band playing live together. That's the big difference in this record from my more recent records, is that I'm working with the band and we play everything together at the same time, which is a discipline I'm really enjoying.
That is a big difference. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Will you be playing any of the new songs on this upcoming tour?
I will be playing definitely one new song. Whether it'll be Small Candle or one of the others, I'm not sure. There's another song that I'm thinking I might do live, because I think it could be great live. It's got different sections, and you know, one of the sections is a very up-tempo 7/8 feel thing, which is really exciting, and I have a lot of ideas of how it might work with the chord and stuff. And that seems to be developing a working title of something like Love in Spite of Traffic, is kind of what it's about. I'm not quite sure how it's going to develop, but I seem to be, I don't know, my preoccupations are changing as I get older.
And boy, they should be changing, you know, I mean, it would be sad if they weren't, you know, you should be growing as a human being, and you obviously are, and
I am. I mean, I'm 182 pounds now. You know, only a few years ago, I was about 160.
Well, there you go. That's exactly what I was talking about, Roger. It's exactly what I meant. You know, by the way, and God, I hate to give you compliments, but L.A. is, and I don't know why, but they are so looking forward to you coming here.
Well, you know, I lived in L.A. for 6 months in 79, and we did a lot of the recording for The Wall there. We finished the thing off in Producer's Workshop on Hollywood, I think it's on Hollywood Boulevard. And so, you know, and recorded a lot of the sound effects and stuff that was on the record. And so all that stuff with me, you know, the bit before Nobody Home where there's the sounds of people in the street and then me shouting, shut up!
Yeah,
well, we just opened the window onto Hollywood Boulevard and stuck a microphone. So I have a real fondness for the city, weird as it is. And the audiences there have always been great. They've always been very responsive. And, you know, I look forward to seeing the people that I worked with all those years ago as well. When I come back to L.A., I always try and get hold of Jim Hart and John Joyce and Stan Farber and Joe Chimay, who were the singers who did the shows with us then, and we usually manage to get them on stage seeing the background, seeing in the flesh or something like that. And I always look forward to that. You know, there's something really cool about meeting old friends again.
Last question. You've spoken before about how music can touch the human spirit. Do you view making music as a spiritual act?
Yeah, music is an expression of the human spirit. So, yeah, well, I very much see it as a spiritual act. Whatever that means. You know, the organization of simple and complex harmonic motions that we describe, you know, within our music, definitely reach parts of us that we can't really define or understand or know. And we all kind of, I think we all intuitively understand that.
Very good. Very good.